Okay. Well, I want to thank the Public Health Education and Health Promotion section for allowing us to organize this session this morning. I'd like to thank my co-presenters, especially the two Washington sidekicks, Dr. James from outside the Beltway in Washington, D.C., and Jessica from the other Washington on the other part of the country. Both have been tremendously busy, as you can understand, during this time, and so we very much appreciate their ability to be here today. And our friends from Massachusetts, both Gail Hirsch and Lorenza Holt, who you hear from in a moment, who have such tremendous wealth of experience to share with us, given that they've been from Massachusetts in the health, going through health reform and working with community health workers. So we have a lot to learn from them. Other than being from Washington, I have no relationships to disclose. One of the things I'd like for you to do is, first of all, it's an exciting time, I think, for us in health education and health promotion. And I'd like to just also tag team on my other presenters to find out how many of you today are actively involved in working some way as a health educator in implementing health reform. Okay, a little less than half. And how many of you are trying to figure out what your piece of the pie is as it relates to ACA implementation? Okay, a few more. Well, I hope by the end of today's presentation, you'll be able to connect the dots, if you will, between the range of knowledge and skills that health educators have to bring to this process, and especially we'll talk a little bit about the enrollment opportunities, what healthcare settings you might work in, and the transformation there in healthcare delivery and payment systems, opportunities that we now have available expanded in worksite wellness, and also at the community level with community transformation grants, all under the ACA umbrella. And then finally, I'd like to leave you with some resources and recommendations to enhance your work. Excuse me, I'd like to thank and acknowledge many people that have contributed to my knowledge, development of my knowledge and understanding of the opportunities here, including Jeff, who is our chair of our Policy Advocacy Committee for SOFI, and many of the members within SOFI who have been working in this area, also my co-presenters here this morning, and many of the great resources that you've seen from HHS, CMS, Enroll America, and other websites that have helped inform my process. So ACA provides us a tremendous window of opportunity, I think, in health education and health promotion. It finally gives us, instead of going to a sick care system where we're trying to get people in secondary and tertiary care, it's turning the ship to a wellness-focused orientation. It provides us policy changes in terms of insurance payer reform and system and the delivery of those services that health educators have a great capacity to engage in. And then our third area, improved care and community linkages, so much of what we can do in terms of working in accountable care organizations, patient-centered medical homes, how we engage in community transformation grants and corporate wellness opportunities. May not surprise some of you, or maybe it does, that the term health educator was only mentioned once in the 2,000-plus pages of health care reform legislation. There's more of a broad tent in the use of the word patient navigator and the roles that we can play in implementing this legislation. And I think it provides us a great opportunity to be able to articulate our knowledge and skills to the employers, the payers, and other stakeholders who are so critical in this process. And so I kind of sum that up as carpe diem. It's up to us to seize the day. And I know that many of us have been, this isn't the first time we hear about ourselves saying, were we left out of the loop? I don't think we were left out of the loop as much as it is as our opportunity to find out ways to use and educate people about the knowledge and skills that we have. So no matter what setting that you might be present in, you may work in, and these are the traditional five or so settings that health educators can traditionally get employed in: schools and colleges, healthcare settings, health departments, voluntary organizations in the community, and work sites. I think there are tremendous opportunity for us to connect the dots with those 10 essential services provided in healthcare reform. Okay. Many of you are familiar with the basic seven areas of responsibility, roles and responsibilities of health educators that are used to undergird the professional preparation programs that we come out of, as well as the certification system that we have, CHES and Certified Health Education Specialist, Master Certified Health Education Specialist. These are our basic areas of competency to be able to assess the needs and assets, capacity of individuals in the community, plan interventions, evidence-based health education interventions, implement them, conduct evaluation and research, administer and manage health education programs, serve as a resource person, whether to individuals or the community or other providers, and to communicate and advocate. And as you see, we can apply these skills at all levels, whether you're dealing with individuals, communities are changing healthcare systems. Excuse me. So let me just kind of tease that out a little bit as you think about what is the value added. And again, these are our messages that you're bringing to employers and others who may not have connected the dots between health educators and what we bring to healthcare reform. We can strengthen the physician-directed team and improve patient outcomes by applying the theories and knowledge, the models of behavior change that we're trained in to improve health behaviors, health outcomes, assist patients to evaluate and select a healthcare insurance option, complete the enrollment process, navigate the health system. We can serve as a bridge to other healthcare providers and community resources. Working at the community level, working with populations, we saw the broad message box that Jessica showed us that we need to communicate. We can develop materials that are appropriate both culturally and linguistically for the population, adapting those message boxes or adapting the messages in the message box. We can develop coalitions and build partnerships to connect individuals to programs and resources. These are the skills that we have. We identify and build bridges between patients and the healthcare and medical organizations that are required to have patient engagement and feedback as part of the new healthcare reform law. Thank you. And at the systems level, the broad 30,000-foot view, we design surveys, we collect data. We spearhead evaluation teams of clinical services that we can assist in improving the delivery of the healthcare team services. I identify the structural barriers that might be present in systems for individuals that might prevent them from seeking care or designing culturally competent and patient-centered programs to improve the health outcomes. And then we can plan and organize worksite or community interventions to address the major chronic diseases. So health educators have an important role at all three of those levels in health in the implementation of health reform. Now I'm going to just talk a little bit about enrollment. As we said, this is opened on the 1st of October. I think everyone in this room, as I think has been underscored by the previous speakers, have an important role in improving public understanding, no matter where you are in those five different employment settings or working at the individual, the community, or systems level. You have an important role to improve consumer understanding. The reference to the Kaiser poll that was done, 40% continue to be confused, that's as of April this year, and I'm sure they're even more confused in some cases now, about what the benefits of the Affordable Care Act and what services they may have accessible to them, especially those households we know under $30,000 that need to become enrolled in health insurance. And 49% of the general population said, just in general, they need more information. So even those that are not necessarily enrolling in health care because they have it already, they need more information about the act. At a minimum, I think we all, as Jessica pointed out, we can put these on our voicemails. We can use a tagline in our own emails to encourage people to become enrolled in health insurance or to where to find information. In terms of some of the skills that you have, again, linking back to the seven areas of responsibility, you have an ability in your organizations to help identify the uninsured, the profiles of the who, what, when, and where, and why, helping your organization develop their outreach strategy. You have the skills to plan and implement the interventions, help develop the programs so that consumers can understand the basics of their health care coverage, identify and compare their coverage options, and select the coverage that's best for them. You have the trusted connections to community resources. You understand better than many healthcare, broad healthcare systems, where people go, where these populations go in your community for information, whether they're barbershops, connections to churches, faith-based groups, beauty salons. You know where people go and what those trusted sources of information are. You can capitalize and use that information in your program planning and communication with your major stakeholders. You have the skills in evaluation research, whether it's survey design and analysis. And it's not just going to be enrolling people. We're going to be needing those skills to retain those people in health insurance, in their keeping their health insurance as well. In terms of administering and managing health education programs, you can help your organization become a certified application counselor organization. You can help develop community health worker trainings, and our friends from Massachusetts will go in there talking a little bit more about that area, providing your healthcare team and your organization to develop their cultural competency skills. You can serve as a resource person to where the health marketplaces exist, and certainly communicating and advocating about the needs of the population as you've identified them, and also looking at the whole opportunity to become a part of the patient navigator system. This is just an example of the navigator assistance training that's available to you or others in your organization. It's a screenshot of where you can go at cms.gov. And there are a variety of training systems here, training programs, modules here, about 5 to 20 hours of training, which are available to you depending upon the type of enrollment training you want to pursue. You can become a navigator. The four categories generally are called navigators, non-navigator assistance personnel, a certified application counselor, and then agents or brokers. I'm going to talk a little bit just about the general roles and responsibilities with our limited time. What would be expected of you as a certified application counselor? Conducting outreach, assisting consumers with eligibility, and assisting small businesses who may need more information about what options are there for their employees and how to get them, how they might become enrolled, to facilitate enrollment, provide information in the best interest of the consumer, and adhere to conflict of interest standards, referring consumers to where they can get more information, providing special accommodations to persons with disability, and a very important part of this whole certification process is upholding privacy and security standards. This is an example of the 14 different modules that are available on cms.gov that one could take. It, again, would require for those that are going to be certified application counselors probably about 20 hours of training. You must pass an exam after each module that you must score 80% or better in order to get the certificate. And one thing I noted in particular is numbers 9 through 12, how much those resonate, those different modules resonate with the types of competencies and the knowledge and skills that health educators have. A certified application counselor must register with the marketplace, complete training courses, pass an exam, as I mentioned, disclose any conflicts of interest if they're applicable. This is all in the application process. Comply with the marketplace privacy and security standards. Enter into agreement with the marketplace. And that certification, once you become certified, is good for 12 months, and there will be continuing education that's required. That's not yet up there on the website. A second major area I'm going to go on to quickly is the role of health educators in patient-centered medical homes and accountable care organizations. For those of you who have not yet learned this lexicon, there's a Sophie White paper available on our website that takes you through in a lot of detail the similarities and differences between these two kind of payment reform and delivery systems. In general, they all have the character, they both have the characteristics of being patient-oriented. Improving healthcare and outcomes, trying to improve the coordination of care process from both a prevention to a primary, secondary, tertiary connection, and lower costs through payment reform. One of the opportunities also within those who work in specific healthcare settings, as well as clinics, might be that you want to pursue a specialty certification. Sophie was successful in working with the certified diabetes educators to now allow those that are MCHES to sit for the exam as long as they get additional clinical hours. So we were able to demonstrate to them the competencies health educators have are very much in line with what's needed for those that are going to work with people that have diabetes. Same thing with certified asthma educators. There may be other kinds of specialty certifications coming online that might assist you then in getting third-party reimbursement for your services and make you a more valued employee. There's certainly opportunities within the corporate wellness world. These existed before, but with ACA, we have many more expanded opportunities for small employers to now provide incentives for their employees to lower cholesterol and have other kinds of biometric outcomes, losing weight. And I commend to you the CDC National Healthy Worksite Program and their particular website that has more evidence-based tools and resources available in this area. For those that are working at the community level, the Prevention and Public Health Fund, our biggest investment, $14.5 billion over the next 10 years, to try to, again, to focus on the chronic diseases, reducing the chronic diseases, whether physical activity, primarily physical activity, use of tobacco, improvement of healthy eating, encourage individuals or to help them live longer and healthy lives. We can't rest on our laurels just because we say, oh, ACA includes prevention and the prevention fund. There's a need for continued advocacy. We find in Washington there's a jeopardy to think of this as sometimes as a slush fund where different stakeholders might find it available to use those funds for their other very specific interests. And I want to invite you and commend to you the annual Health Education and Advocacy Summit, which is put on by the Public Health Ed Section, Sophie, and other members of the Coalition of National Health Education Organizations, and will be next year, February 22nd to 24th in Washington, D.C. APHA has a number of resources here to educate you and to keep you informed. I want to commend to you. Sophie does as well. Our whole 2013 National Health Education Week just a couple of weeks ago was centered on ACA and what the role of the health educator is. We have through our journals, our white papers, and other resources all available on our website. In summary, I want to leave you with the reinforcement that all health educators have a role to play in educating consumers about ACA. Consider how those seven areas of responsibility fit into your job description, ways you can play a role in enrollment, and whether you're in healthcare settings, worksite health, or community settings. And it's going to be challenging for many of us that didn't come through a professional prep program, learning the lexicon and getting being able to speak the language, walk the talk with many of the providers. And so I want to commend you to use the resources that Enroll America, CMS, and many others have. In the end, you know, we come to Boston and we typically say it's Boston here in the marathon, and we look at many problems in public health as saying, well, they're a marathon, not a sprint. Julian Castro was the mayor of San Antonio, was one of the youngest mayors in the country, and I thought really summed it up well in our challenge here, and saying the American dream is not a sprint or even a marathon, but a relay. Our families don't always cross the finish line in the span of one generation, but each generation passes on the next fruits of their labor. I believe that's how what we are going to have to do in health education and health promotion is to build the base and work toward the next generation of health educators, improving the lives of individuals. So thank you very much for your attention.